Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, one of the most important figures in the history of California, Jerry Brown, the longest serving governor in the history of our state, four-term governor. He was governor when he was 36. He was governor when he was 80. He's also served as the attorney general, the secretary of state, the mayor of Oakland, the chair of the California Democratic Party. And his father was the governor of California and the attorney general. What a life. What a conversation. He spoke for a while. This was one of our longer interviews that we've done. And for the podcast, we've chosen to put the whole thing out there so you can listen to it in its entirety. We talked about Caitlyn Jenner, about climate change, about criminal justice reform, about him and his leadership. So here it is, our conversation with Governor Brown. Jerry Brown is back. Governor Brown, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Oh, thank you. And I really like being back.
All right. Well, we've got some big issues like climate change, criminal justice reform to tackle. We'll have plenty of time to do that. But before we do, I got to ask you about a story that broke late in the week about your old job. Caitlyn Jenner is running for governor of California. Your thoughts?
My thoughts is whenever you have a recall of a governor, which is really unique in my lifetime, it's only happened once, everybody and their brother is gonna jump in. When Gray Davis faced a recall, over 120 candidates jumped in. They all think, because this is an exciting moment, that they're gonna get some exposure. Now, they won't for the most part. I think Caitlyn Jenner will get some, but at the end of the day, it'll come down to how people are feeling about the state and the stewardship of Governor Newsom. So that's the big issue. And there'll be some side dramas, but I don't think that Caitlyn Jenner will I don't think she'll affect the outcome. The issues are big. We're a Democratic state. Republicans are almost about half the size, and there are a lot of independents. So I think people are going to think about how their lives are going, what they think about the governor, and my hunch at this point is that the governor has a very strong probability of being not recalled and staying around for another election, which won't be too many months later, and yeah, we'll go do it again. And I don't know whether Caitlyn Jenner will try to jump on that campaign either.
But just specifically about Caitlyn Jenner's qualifications for this job, you know this job better than anybody else. You've served in this job longer than anybody else. Do you think that Caitlyn Jenner is prepared to be the governor of California?
Look, I only know about Caitlyn Jenner a couple of news articles I read, so I have no idea. I can tell you what it takes to be governor is intelligence, a lot of common sense, an ability to get along with the legislature and the press and all the different constituent groups. And it does take, usually you should spend some time in politics, but Ronald Reagan did. George Murphy ran for the Senate, he did. But I don't think the question is really whether Caitlyn Jenner, A, could be elected or B, could do a decent job. I think the question is, what about the governor? What about the state? I think there, any fair-minded analysis would say, Newsom does not deserve to be recalled, and I think he deserves to be reelected. So I don't want to get too far into whether Caitlyn Jenner could do this or not, because I don't think she's going to have the chance.
You know, well, I mean, just to push back on the recall itself, there are some proponents of the recall that say the governor went too far with COVID. They say that the regulations were burdensome, hurt businesses, hurt schools, having kids out for so long, and that he should go. What's your response to that?
Well, my response, having been a governor, is it's a hell of a tough job. It's not only Newsom that makes some people unhappy. Governor of New York, Governor of New Jersey, Governor of Michigan, Merkel, the chancellor in Germany, other leaders, the president of France. Look, the virus is it's not impossible. Very difficult to manage. We don't know quite where it's going. It's insidious. It's invisible. People are dying. They're getting sick. Although, you know, do we have to shut down our business? How much? It's not easy. Although I think things are on the side of the governor. People are getting vaccinated. California is doing better than almost any other state. So I'd say, well, I think it's going to be good media, at the end of the day, I think there'll be a reaffirmation of the current incumbent.
All right, let's talk about one of your signature issues, climate change. Late this week, the governor, Governor Newsom, announcing that he wants to ban new fracking permits in California by 2024 and eventually phase out all oil extraction by 2045. What do you think? Good idea? Is this needed? Realistic to pull this off?
Certainly, I said, and I think many scientists, most would agree, that we have to get to zero oil extraction, or very close to it, by 2045. But how you get there between now and then is a matter of judgment, prudence, economic incentives, really helping the people who could lose their job and the communities who will lose the tax revenue and all of that. So look, it's coming. We have to get off of oil and gas and coal, certainly. And how we get off of that, that's the challenge for the president. It's also the challenge for the governor. So this is a long-range goal for the most part, and we'll see it. I have to say, just being very frank about it, this is very difficult. Very difficult for anyone who's governor. So whether you're banning all oil or the small subset of fracking or all the other things, which are many and varied, that you're going to have to say no to while you try to invent other pathways of yes. So you cushion the blow, you avoid the backlash, and you get the job done. I think this is extraordinarily difficult. I think the oil extraction is an important aspect of the problem and therefore of the solution, but it's only one. And there's a lot of difficulty ahead for the people of California and the people who lead us, the governor. So that's all I want to say on the oil fracking issue. Stay tuned. There's a lot more for farmers, for businesses, for individuals, for fireplaces, for cows, for trees, you name it. We are facing a transformation in our lives. Now, is that it's going to take 30, 40, 50 years, and it's going to require a tremendous amount of innovation. Technical innovation, it's going to require changes in the tax structure and in the job structure and in the way we conduct ourselves. We got to cut down on the waste dramatically. We got to change our forms of consumption while we keep a very, very excellent way of living. But we got to live with nature in a way that it works with us instead of against us, which is the case today. So big changes. Big, big difficulty for whoever is in charge as this transition unfolds.
But on the issue of fracking itself, there are some environmentalists that wish that you would have banned fracking when you were in there. Do you now, knowing what you know now, regret the fact that you didn't?
No, not at all. Look, there's no one who did more about climate than I did. Some of the activists want to see their version of the transition. But it was my judgment, based on all the factors, that fracking was not at the top of what we had to do. Zero emission cars, energy regulations like building, reducing the energy consumption of buildings, changing the fuels, the low carbon fuel standard, cap and trade. There are regulating various air pollutants, the super pollutants, methane and NOx and soot. Look, there are 100 factors, you know, many more than 100 that have to be managed. How you manage it politically and economically without a backlash, without everything being reversed, because we know after Obama came Trump and everything stopped. You don't want to go so far that then you elect somebody who's going to go in the opposite direction. So this is a matter of art. But it's a matter of science. And I think they say it in poker, you got to know when to hold and when to fold. And I believe my judgment was correct. And we'll just see as we go forward. But there's always a risk if you want to, if you move without taking into account the what I would call the configuration of arrayed forces against you and how you manage getting through it, you can then blow it. And then somebody else is going to come along. And they're going to do the exact opposite of what you like to do. So that's my reason. I'm sympathetic with those who oppose fracking. Although I do want to say, California imports 70% of our oil, of gasoline. So if we don't reduce our consumption, by the way, which is 18 billion gallons of gasoline and diesel every year, if we don't reduce that, if we reduce for every barrel of oil not fracked, we're going to import an oil from North Dakota or Saudi Arabia or some other distant place, and it will be produced under worse conditions. So the answer is reduce the use of oil and in parallel, reduce the production of oil. Mm-hmm. But they both go together. And if you try to separate them, you will defeat your purpose because you'll bring in just more oil to make up for the bit that you blocked from coming from California.
You know, it's a big news this week from the White House when it comes to climate. To mark Earth Day this week, the president, part of a virtual summit with leaders from all around the world, he announced some big goals, among them 50% reduction in greenhouse gases by 2030. That's just a start. Here's what the president said.
These steps will set America on a path of net zero emissions economy by no later than 2050.
So my question for you, Governor, is what he's doing here enough? And why does this matter for the average Californian? Because when somebody hears about greenhouse gas reduction, a lot of people's eyes glaze over, don't know exactly what that means for them.
And that's why it's difficult politically to impose burdens on something that's so abstract, at least for most people. Well, it is abstract. First of all, is it enough? It's certainly enough for today. Is it enough to get the job done? Well, we have a number of years to do it, but we're going to have to do even what was said is good, and it's relying on a lot of technical innovation. But we're going to have to change our patterns of how we consume, what we buy, how we live, and how we build, and what things we collect, and how we store them, and whether we recycle them or throw them away. There's a lot of stuff to be done. We can't know it all. But President Biden has taken the biggest step of any American president, and more than most of the leaders of the world. So that's good. But the key here is we've got to get China. As you know, I'm the chairman of the California China Climate Institute, and I can tell you China is responsible for 27% of the greenhouse gas emissions. America's responsible for about 13 or 14. Together, that's 40%. Mm. So if China isn't in lockstep, isn't in close partnership with America, it won't get done. So everything we do will be in vain. So America and China particularly have to work together with the European Union and with India and with Russia. So there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of Cold War rhetoric about this bad thing or that bad thing, and some of them are very bad. But the big bad is climate disruption. And California is ground zero for that. My ranch is ground zero for that. Mm. There's the water level is so low, the dryness, the whole landscape is different. So we must take all the steps in California, in the United States, under President Biden, and then we have to go with China in research and development, in joint standards, in different kinds of programs where we work together and then we help Africa and South America and other places. This is no time for macho nationalism. This is the time for what I call planetary realism. And that is based on this simple fact. We are all vulnerable to climate change. And therefore, we all have the same interest in preventing it. When I say we, I mean Russia, China, India, Europe, all the rest. So this is a great opportunity to pull the people of the world together in one cause, which we all are affected by, either positively or negatively. And by working together, we make it more likely that it will be positive.
I mean, you're negotiating with them. Is China open to this? Or do you think that this is really going to happen?
China, yes, very much so. China wants to form a working group with the United States right now. And I think the U.S. will. It's been a little hesitant because there are things that the U.S. doesn't like that China's doing, and a number of things with the Uyghurs and threatening Taiwan and suppressing freedom in Hong Kong and all that. Those are serious matters. But if the climate continues to warm, then those will be more than trumped by the starvation, the disruptive storms, and the infectious diseases, and maybe worst of all and most immediate, mass migration. Mm. You think we got a problem with the border? That's nothing. It's child's play compared to what drought prolonged for years will do to Central America. Right. So we have an interest in working with China because they're putting twice as much pollutant in the environment as we are. Mm. So let us join together technically, financially, to help third world countries. And yeah, we have these disputes. I don't want to minimize them, but you know what? Countries of the world always had disputes. I mean, the Lutherans and the Catholics had a dispute, and they killed 25% of the people in Germany. Would have been better if they said, okay, we don't like that, you don't like this. Let's find a path forward on the big issue, which is called climate survival.
I got to say, you are the first guest to bring up the Lutheran-Catholic dispute on the issue, so I appreciate
that. Well, it was the 30 Years' War, yeah, and it was so stupid.
Right.
It was about the Pope, who liked the Pope, who didn't like the Pope,
right,
and something as obscure as consubstantiation versus transubstantiation.
Right.
That's all obscure, but we're going to find out in a few years if we have a bunch of wars that some of the reasons for the wars might have been that stupid.
All right. Well, you know, this, what we're looking at, though, in the United States is quite a change from the previous administration. I want to play you some sound from when you and I were together with President Trump in Malibu, and I asked him about climate change and contrast it with Joe Biden this week.
Is it possible that climate change is a real issue here and that there needs to be change?
At everything. I mean, it is land management and it's forest management, really, is what you mean. But we're going to be looking at every factor and we're going to get to the bottom of it. And I think we can do it fairly quickly.
The signs are unmistakable. The science is undeniable. But the cost of inaction keeps mounting. The United States isn't waiting. We are resolving to take action.
Quite a contrast, huh?
Yeah, big contrast. Here's the problem. Trump kind of made it seem like another problem. The difficulty is that every year we're putting 40 billion or so particles of heat-trapping gases. This 40 billion tons. And that's blocking the heat. So when the sun comes down, the heat stays on the earth. And that is getting worse and worse. To the extent we don't, and so we're putting molecules, the whole world, everybody, is putting molecules up into the atmosphere. We're going to have to, at some point, take them out of the atmosphere, which is many more times more expensive than not putting them there in the first place. So even though the transition from oil, gas, and coal is difficult, and from fossil fuel cars to electric cars, we got to do it, and it's actually cheaper than it would be if we delay and then have to all rapidly try to clean up our mess by extracting CO2 from the atmosphere. That's really expensive, and then you have to stick it in the ground, and then it will start escaping. People in Los Angeles worried about methane escaping. Well, if you have CO2 under the ground, someday it may get out, and then you can go right back to your heat-trapping problem. So, look, we have to take action. And we got to do it fast.
You know, there are still some folks, especially Republicans, who are skeptical about climate change itself. When Governor Schwarzenegger was on our set here before the pandemic, he said that the issue should maybe be branded differently. Here's some of what he told me.
But I think what we should really mention is smog. Smog kills people, pollution kills people, and this is what we should get rid of. And so I think it's a whole different thing. And we have seen the tests. When you go and test and you say to Republicans, for instance, what about climate change? This is one of the important issues. They said no, 15% maybe say yes. And then when you say pollution, and then you have more than 50% saying, oh yeah, that's a serious issue. I think we should address that right away.
How do you think this message can be better communicated so people understand it?
Well, Arnold does a very good job. He's right. The pollutants like black carbon or soot, that gets in your lungs. That can cause disease, emphysema, asthma, things. It kills people. In fact, it kills like 40,000 people a year, according to a Harvard study several years ago. So Arnold is right. Visualize the pollutants. Now, CO2, you don't see it, but that's not the only pollutant. It's the main one. So identifying it as pollution is a good thing. It's a powerful thing. And, yeah, we got to do all we can. Republicans, look, they are they're strange. I mean, I like them. I know some of them are listening, but climate is real. The climate change, the science is there. We got to deal with it, folks. And I hope the Republicans will come along, but Arnold's a good spokesman. Some of the Republicans are doubtful about him. I do want to say he took some bold moves on climate, and he does, when he frames it in the way that he does, I think that's very effective.
We want to talk about some other issues as well. We are talking with Jerry Brown, the governor of California. This week, a landmark moment for criminal justice reform and race relations when this happened.
Find the defendant guilty.
That was the moment right there where Derek Chauvin was found guilty of the murder of George Floyd. I'm curious, you, Governor, as somebody who has looked at these issues for so many decades as both governor and attorney general, what did that moment mean to you?
Well, it was a moment of justice. The man did sit on the man's head for 9 minutes, his neck, and we saw it. Many times things like that might happen, and we never see him. So this is something that we know about. And the jury acted. They saw it more than we do. And they heard the contrary evidence, if there was any, from the defense. So I think it's a powerful statement. And I would say this. Cops have a very tough job. And I work closely with the police in California when I was attorney general. But with that power of the gun and the badge, and having to deal with so many bad actors, bad people, they can get an attitude of we them, black, white, you know, this so they lose the sensitivity or the empathy that is needed. Now, when you're trying to disable somebody who might threaten you, that takes a lot of training not to go overboard. And unfortunately, there's more training and more supervision to come if we're really going to get to a point where people feel good about the police, particularly minorities who faced a lot of harrowing circumstances that people in more affluent positions just haven't faced.
And a lot of that is really up to the California Attorney General. Not only were you Attorney General, your dad also was Attorney General. And this week we got a new Attorney General in the state, Rob Bonta, a criminal justice reformer. I spoke with him this week. Here's some of what he had to say. What do you say to those people that are concerned that this is going to make it easier for criminals and, in fact, make them less safe?
We can be safer, we can support victims, and we can be fairer and more just and more humane all at the same time.
There are some, though, that are concerned about California's, you know, new policies might not protect crime victims enough. What do you say to that?
Oh, pardon me. I thought you were talking to...
Sorry.
I didn't get that. You can also try Stone.
That's Siri. I'm trying to turn off my telephone, and I'm doing a very bad job.
Oh, okay.
So that's what I'm doing. All right. What do I think about it? I think that victims' rights are very important, and I think California is doing as much, probably as much as anybody, maybe more than most, and we should. But at the same time, dealing with criminals, that's serious business. And the criminals who rob and hijack and burglarize and hit people over the head, these are people who are not easy to deal with. So the police have a very difficult job. Yes, some of them go overboard. Some of them are really hard-headed in a way that has to be changed. But that's not just for the Attorney General. In fact, I would say he has a very small role in this. It's the police chief. It's the city council, the boards of supervisors, the judges. There are many people who have to assist in the improvement of police-citizen relations and the policing so that it is constitutional, it's human, but effective. Because, you know, there's crime. I can tell you, in Oakland, crime's up three times what it was a year ago, the murder rate. So, yeah, at least, you know, it's not easy. I was mayor. I tried to lower the crime rate. It actually went up the last 2 years I was mayor. And I think it is a very demanding occupation and challenge. And so wouldn't minimize that, although I can tell you there are some hard heads. I have some hard heads in the police departments that have to be either removed or improved or transformed. And there's a culture here. It's a culture that, you know, they're on the front lines. most of us never have to deal with what a cop has to deal with almost every day. Right. So I have a lot of empathy. I appreciate it. But we've got to make a lot more progress in order to make sure that all our citizens are treated fairly.
But there are some people that feel like the policies that were implemented maybe in the 70s and 80s in California that was more tough on crime led to a lot of some of this mass incarceration issues. Do you think that? And looking back now, do you maybe think California went too far?
Well, it went too far in mass incarceration, no question. When I left the governorship, we had 12 prisons. I don't think that was enough. But then we went to 34 prisons, which was way overblown. We had, during Reagan, during my time, we had as low as 18,000, 19,000 people in prison. It got up as high as 25, 30,000. Well, in a couple of decades, it shot up to 173,000. So way over. And even now, they're putting people way too long. I'm not saying someone shouldn't be locked up, but for how long? That's why you need a good parole board, which I think California now has. I think we can continue to do better. But yeah, people went overboard because of the crack epidemic, lots of things. Politics, you know, it comes in waves. Mm-hmm. And the law and order thing, it really, it kind of started with, crime in the streets with Richard Nixon politicizing the issue. And then it just grew under Clinton and then and continuing. And now there's been a pushback. And I think the criminal justice system is getting better. But we still have too many people locked up. There's still not enough education, transformation, enough of the right environment in prison. So we have both order, but we have enough imagination of what we're doing that we can bring people along, many of whom are capable. Some are diehard. They're either crazy or they're so embedded in their evil ways that they got to stay locked up. That's a lot of people, but it's not, 100,000 plus that are in prison or in jail.
But is that something that you regret from your time?
Well, I don't know if you'd say regret. First of all, I didn't build all the prisons. That was Magin, Wilson, and Gray Davis. That's when the prisons were built. I said they should have built some more. And the minimum sentencing, when I passed the determined sentencing bill, sentences were much lower. We didn't have all these enhancements. We didn't take away the right to earn credits. Now we've restored some of that. So what happened was every year I did some tough on crime. Usually doesn't go to prison was one. The determined sentencing, I think, increased. As a matter of fact, I doubled the number of people who were sent to prison after being convicted of a felony. So I think that was moving in a reasonably smart direction. But after I left, they didn't call a halt. They just kept it going, and they doubled and tripled what I'd been doing. So when I came back, I started reversing all that. Not just me, but the whole country was taking a second look. And I have to tell you something about politics. It doesn't move in just a nice straight line. Mm-hmm. It zigs and it zags. And generally speaking, we overdo it. The advocates don't know when to stop. They advocate until another advocacy group gets stronger and pushes them back. So you can expect that the police went to excess, and you may find some of the reforms may appear or may in fact go to excess. So it's a matter of balance, of wisdom, of justice. And that takes a level of wisdom and restraint that is very uncommon in the political process.
Our conversation continues with four-time California Governor Jerry Brown. Governor, when you joined us last May, you talked about President Trump and what you were hoping to see in a new president. Here's some of what you said back then.
We need a new Roosevelt. If Trump wants to do that, great. If he doesn't want to do that, we got to get somebody else who will. It's that simple.
So, how do you assess President Biden? Can you give us some insight in him? Do you think he's a new Roosevelt?
Well, he's sounding like it. He has elements because we're not in a depression. And Biden is a very different character than Franklin Delano Roosevelt, as I remember seeing the movies of Roosevelt. But he's coming up with a big investment plan. infrastructure, building roads. He supports high-speed rail, water projects. He wants to put America back to work. And that's what Roosevelt was. He's looked around, saw one-third of America ill-housed, ill-clothed, and ill-fed. And he started programs. He wasn't afraid of government, and neither is Joe Biden. So I'd say he's closely aligned to what I'd said back there in 2020.
You know, you were one of the few politicians in the history of politics that did two things. You both raised taxes and cut spending. Most people don't do that. Governor Brown, President Biden now spending a whole lot of money all at once. Are you worried that it might be too much?
Well, could be. He's going to have to start paying for it. He will. And unfortunately, according to the polls I've seen, people don't want to pay. The average guy doesn't want to pay any taxes, say anymore. Didn't want to pay gas tax, didn't want to pay fees. Well, this is a big problem because progressive programs, meaning expensive, big, comprehensive, affecting hundreds of millions, that costs money. And that often calls for what some people are going to call regressive taxation. A tax expert told me that once. Progressive programs require regressive taxes. What do you mean? He means that everybody's going to have to pay. Now, if you look at these billionaires who've gone, some of them over $100 billion, instead of being hurt in the pandemic, they've gotten richer faster. So they need to be taxed big time and seriously. But at the end of the day, we're all in it. We all benefit. And we're going to have to, President and the Congress, we'll have to find ways that we all share in the undertaking.
You know,
that's what I would say. And that politically is a very narrow path.
You know, big picture in terms of President Biden, it seems like he has learned a lot of lessons from the Obama administration and trying to do the opposite on certain things. Both you and Joe Biden got into politics, your 20s and 30s, still in politics in your 70s. I'm wondering if you can reflect on what it's like to be an older politician and how that's different maybe from being a younger politician and how you assess that with Joe Biden.
Well, when you're younger, you don't know as much. And in some ways, you can be bolder because you don't really know what the pitfalls are. After you've made a few mistakes and you've lived longer, then, your eye gets better, at least it should. And so you know more, and you know you can't do everything. So you know, and Biden has made mistakes. So I think that's the big benefit. People say we need to, you know, younger people are all too old. I don't think so. I think that being around, having lived, is very helpful. Maybe Biden's biggest asset. He's seen stuff. And so that's good. We need wisdom because we're in a very dangerous world, not just climate, but relations with other countries, new Cold War, possibly a hot war, use of nuclear weapons, artificial intelligence, space, cyber. This is a dangerous world, and it's getting more dangerous. So it takes wisdom. Wisdom often only comes with age.
Well, there's a lot of wisdom here as we talk with Governor Jerry Brown. If you're interested in learning more about Governor Jerry Brown, I cannot recommend these two books enough. I've read both of them. There's Man of Tomorrow by Jim Newton. He's a former LA Times reporter. The book is really excellent. And then there's also Miriam Powell's book, which is called The Browns of California. Both of them are really good. And we know that you hate to talk about legacies, but Jim Newton described your legacy at the end of his book this way. He says, quote, "He was not satisfied to be a liberal, though that would have been the easiest path for him in California. He believed that government should observe limits, a deeply conservative principle. He was thoroughly and completely his own person. That may not be a legacy in traditional terms, but it is an achievement worthy of study and evaluation. It is a gift to history." What do you make of that assessment?
Well, obviously, I accept the nomination. That's nice. I did a lot of stuff. When you come the second time around, you have a lot of knowledge. But in terms of legacy, you wouldn't probably expect this, but I restored the governor's mansion where eight governors lived before. And I think that will be a place that school kids and citizens from time to time will be able to get a sense of the past and the greatness of California. I'm also restoring the Mountain House, where my grandmother grew up, and my great-grandfather came as a pioneer shortly after, during the Gold Rush, as a matter of fact. So those are the things that I'm leaving a mark. As far as the day-to-day activities, boy, it's ephemeral. It's amazing how quickly governors are forgotten. And so that's just a part of the flotsam and jetsam of history, the flow. So I'm in the flow. I'm still here talking to you. So that's good. And those books are pretty good. I'm glad you're promoting them. You can learn a lot about California. But I stand on the shoulders of my father, his parents, my great-grandparents, and also on those who came before me as governors. And in their own way, they all did stuff. So we're all part of it. That's why we all got to pitch in. And that's why this toxic attitude between Democrats and Republicans as though they're all different. Well, we're all Americans, we're all human beings, and we're all on planet Earth. And that's why I say planetary realism. Get real, folks, we can blow it up. In fact, there's a book called The Precipice by Toby Ord. You can pitch that at another time. He says in that book on page 31 that he estimates that humanity has a 1 in 6 chance of going extinct in the next 80 years. That's pretty serious. So I would say we better knock off the petty grievances and battles and get to work on the common undertaking, which is survival, improvement, equity, and living with nature, not trying to fight it.
Well, we've talked about a lot of serious issues, but we do like to have a little bit of fun here on this show. So we're going to play a game called Personal Issues. This is where we put 30 seconds up on the clock, ask you some rapid-fire questions to try to get to know you a little bit better. Hopefully we can have some fun and get with this. So here we go, 30 seconds. Governor, on this Oscar weekend, what is your favorite movie of the year?
I don't have a favorite movie. I don't even have a television set. I'm sorry. I'm out on a ranch. I see rattlesnakes, cows, and elk.
Okay. What is your favorite restaurant in California?
My favorite restaurant in California? Well, I used to go more. The one I've gone to more often is Tommaso's, a pizza, supposedly the oldest pizza oven in San Francisco. It's in North Beach, family-owned, and... I haven't been to a restaurant, though, since last February.
Yeah.
I haven't been on an airplane. I haven't been in a restaurant. I like Zoom so I can get out, but I'm not getting out too far.
All right. The last question on that is, who is your role model?
Who's my role model? That's a very good question. I don't think I have any political role models. There's two intellectuals that I find interesting, Ivan Illich and Gregory Bateson. In terms of human beings, I was very impressed with Mother Teresa. She was a woman of command and simplicity.
And you got to spend time with her, right?
Yes, I did. I was impressed. And we talk about leaders. That woman was a leader because she started with nothing, picking up a person off the street of Calcutta, and she built a worldwide movement. The missionaries of charity. So to go from something to nothing takes extraordinary leadership. I just won an election and just show up at the governor's office. I have all the staff and all this know-how, a lot easier. But when you just invent something, start something original, that's quite extraordinary. And she kept going right to the end.
Our thanks to Governor Brown, and our thanks to you for listening. We'll be back next week with more of The Issue Is. Hope you'll connect with me in social media. In the meantime, at Alex Michelson. Have a great week.